Just when you thought the hiring cycle couldn't get any crazier, it has in the NFL with one of the wildest stories I've ever seen. Plus, we have an AFC Championship matchup. I don't know if you've heard about it yet. We're going to preview it. Juggernauts going at each other. We'll break it all down now. It's time for Inside Coverage. He's Frank Schwab. I'm Jason Fitz. It's Friday. It's Fri-yay because I'm with you, brother. Charles Robinson out today. He's sick, under the weather, giving him a big remote bear hug. But it means that you and I have to hold down the fort of Feisty Fridays. So I just want to start by saying, screw you, Frank. All right, let's just start fighting right out of the gate. You know what? You're good for nothing. I don't understand your opinions. You're a hack. You don't know what you're talking about. You don't know ball. I think I've covered them all. The Jags are looking for a head coach. And just when you thought it couldn't get weirder for Jacksonville, just in general, like, this is the wildest story. So for anyone that hasn't seen this, here's what we know. Shad Khan, who we've been very hard on this show, is the owner of the Jacksonville Jaguars. Now, they fired their head coach. That was no surprise. But they kept their GM, Trent Baalke, for quite a while as they started their interview process. And through the interview process, nobody seemed really interested in the job. And most of the rumblings we were hearing was that, frankly, Baalke was part of the problem here. So all of a sudden, what you have is last week we get reports that the Jags have zeroed in on Liam Cohen to be their future head coach. He's currently the offensive coordinator for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Looked like that was going to happen. Then all of a sudden, Cohen pulls his name out, says no. Reports surface that he's taking an extension and a big money raise up to almost $5 million a year to remain offensive coordinator of Tampa Bay. And right after that happens, Shad Khan then, suddenly weeks after firing Doug Peterson, fires Trent Baalke, their GM, to basically say, now that we've missed out on Ben Johnson, yes. Now that we've missed out on Mike Vrabel, now that we've missed out on any real conversations we want to have anywhere, we'll get rid of Trent Baalke. And now, all of a sudden, that means, according to reports, that everything's reversed with Liam Cohen. So just when it looked like he was signing an extension to stay with Tampa Bay, now he's talking to the Jags again. Nobody really knows what's going on. We just know that this seems like a full court press by Jacksonville to get their guy. But Frank, I mean, at some point, you have to look at it and say, no matter if they get their guy, fine. If they get their guy, they got what they wanted. That's all that matters, yeah. I guess. But also, if we're being fair, this is one of the most incompetent hiring processes I can ever remember. The fact that you waited this long to make the inevitable move of getting rid of the GM, to put yourself behind, to not even get the chance to talk to some of the candidates, and now you're doing it to get Liam Cohen, who we don't even know if he's actually going to take the job. Like, this is wild.
It's pretty unbelievable, and I don't really take back anything I said about Shad Khan and the Jaguars on Wednesday's show. This was just a ridiculous operation from top to bottom. And I did see like some people like, oh, this had Liam Cohen's change of heart had nothing to do with Trent Baalke. Like, okay, come on. It's the greatest coincidence in humankind, whatever. But that's fine if you want to go with that. So at the end of the day, though, and we've talked about this, like, okay, how do you, what was the final result? Well, you got the guy you wanted, Liam Cohen. It had a great season, obviously, with Tampa Bay's offense. So I'm not giving him a pass. It still speaks to the dysfunction in the Jaguars organization, but the end result's fine. Like, you got a coach you really, really wanted. You kind of backed your way into it. Now you got to kind of reverse engineer the GM part of it, but you got a good coach. So I guess they did fine by that. It cost Shad Khan probably a little bit more money, but Shad Khan's got money to spend. I never feel bad for owners having to spend on coaches. So, but the Liam Cohen part of this is interesting to me. I saw so many people, and you know, we treat sports differently than real life. And I'll get to this as we go, that Liam Cohen is going to make $4.5 million about all these numbers are estimates, right? $4.5 million is the Tampa Bay offensive coordinator. And then Jacksonville comes ahead and says, well, and the report out there is quote unquote Ben Johnson money, which has been reported about $13 million. So Jacksonville comes back basically and says, hey, we're going to give you $13 million to coach our team. Everybody who's saying like, oh, Liam Cohen is this and that and this and that. Now, I'm not saying he handled this well. Like, this was poorly handled. He kind of ghosted the Buccaneers. But in your real life, whatever job you have, or anybody listening out there, if somebody came to you and said, all right, we are going to get you to the ultimate job in your profession, the dream job in your profession, you're going to have total control there. And on top of that, we're going to bump your pay by about three times what you're making now. Every single one of us would do that. every one of us. And if there was some roadblock to it that we could kind of skirt around, we probably would. Let's be really honest about this. Now, again, Liam Cohen did not handle this well. He kind of just never, he's trying to do this in secret and try not to let the cat out of the bag because he had this contract that he hadn't signed with the Buccaneers. But we treat sports people like they're not real people, right? We treat them like characters in a movie or avatars or something, that just because they are part of our favorite team, that you have to have loyalty to that team forever. And how dare you say you're coming back to the Buccaneers and then go to the Jaguars? Any one of us would have done the same thing Liam Cohen did. Any one of us. I'm sorry. Like, you could say you would handle it better. That's fine. But every one of us would have come to the same conclusion of taking this Jacksonville Jaguars job. And it's just, it's weird to me to see people just shredding Liam Cohen on Twitter. It's like, I get it. Like, a lot of this was a little unprofessional, but again, any one of us would have done this.
You make a really good point, Frank. Like, let me also say, look, the NFL is a relationship business, but I think we can fairly loudly say screw professionalism when you have, look, a team will fire you in a heartbeat, right? So where's your loyalty? Like a team will get, if everything goes downhill for Tampa Bay next year, they fire their head coach. And as a result, they fire that entire staff. Well, now coordinators who are typically only on 2 or 3 year deals, depending on the team they're on. But even if he's making 4.5 for 3 or 4 years, like he has the chance to make generational, not that that isn't, but he has a chance to make even more money, have more opportunity to do what he wants to do. Like let's take these same numbers, 4.5 and 13.5. Let's take these same numbers and apply them in a way I think people can understand to this point, because most of us will never see that kind of money. If you right now don't like your job and you get the chance to interview somewhere else and you say, nope, I don't want to do that. And your job says, we're so happy you're coming back, we will offer you a raise to $45,000 a year. $45,000 a year. Let's go. That's great. And then the company you said no to turns around and says, all right, I'll offer you $135,000 a year to come over here. Like that's
and
the
it's a
real
more prestigious job. And we give you all the power you want.
You get to run the whole thing and do it however you want. We'll give you 135. Like every single person that's in a situation where they're making 45 grand a year is taking the 135. To be clear, if you're making 450 grand and somebody offers you 1.3 million, you're taking the 1.3 million, right?
Everyone.
I think that is a very fair point to all of this. It's been messy. It's been ugly. I think my problem with the Jags is they made it clear. They made it so clear that Shad Khan was only there if somebody wanted him to be there and he could be gone and all of these. It was such a lazy way to do it. If you were going to get rid of him anyway, then why? Well, if you're only letting Balky be around for the fun of the process, you could have cut ties with him from the beginning then seen every candidate. And I think that's the important misstep by Shad Khan here. Shad Khan is just sort of dangling somebody along that doesn't want to be part of this or may want to be part of this or might not be part of this. And Liam Cohen comes in and cleans house completely. I have more problem with the way the Jags handled this than I will ever have with the way Liam Cohen handled this. He's just worried about his business.
Me too. I will say this, that Shad Khan did the one thing I've been kind of railing about the last couple of weeks where he just said, all right, Liam, how much? How much you want? You want 13? Here you go. Like, it's just money. It's not on our salary cap.
Yeah, that's fair.
I can afford it. Like, and I think more teams need to do that. They don't leverage this. And hey, you know what? If the Buccaneers really wanted Liam Cohen that bad, would have given him more than $4.5 million. Like, give him $13 million. Who cares if it's blowing away the record by three times? Like, again, like I talk about this a lot with owners and coaches. Like, this is the one thing that they could spend on that doesn't affect the product whatsoever, because it's just, there's no salary cap to it. So again, yes, the Jaguars really, really backed into this, but they got a good coach. I think everybody's excited about what Liam Cohen could be as an NFL head coach. And I won't sit there and say he starts off on a bad note or anything because of how awkward and sloppy this was. It's just, it ended up how it was going to end up. The coach was always going to take the more prestigious job with three times the amount of pay. And the Jaguars really they're not beholden to the Buccaneers. Like, whatever, you haven't signed your contract. Come on, we'll give you whatever money you want. It is what it is. Like, this is business. This happened. And just because it's in the sporting realm doesn't make it any different than any other business.
According to the Google machine, Shad Khan is worth $13.5 billion.
Yeah,
so to make right math now. Easy, let's say that he was offering $13.5 million to Liam Cohen. That's 1%. So for anybody that's out there doing the math in their head, if you make $150,000 a year, that's the equivalent of spending $1,500 on somebody that's going to run your entire empire. Like, right. That's just...
Yeah.
I mean, that's what $13.5 million is to Shad Khan. Like, it's just...
And I can guarantee you, being an owner of an NFL team, he will probably make more than $13.5 million this year.
Oh,
that's
God,
just
yeah.
a guess. I mean, that's just a guess, okay? Yeah.
$13.5 million is like, hey, honey, you want to do a new extension to the house for Shad Khan? Like, that's just like when you're worth $13.5 billion, handing a coach $13.5 million is literally nothing. So, and Leon Combe is a coach that I've said on record, I will say again, I think it's a great hire. This makes a lot of sense to me. I really like what he did with Tampa Bay's offense, yes, but I talked to him when Will Levis was drafted, and just talking to him about the way he wanted to develop Will Levis, I thought it was so smart. Like, he's obviously intelligent and ready to run a franchise. I love the hire for Jacksonville. It's just how obnoxious could you make it for everybody getting there? That's the hardest part of it. And, you know, if you're Liam Cohen, none of that matters. Like, you get your job, you walk into a job where you have a quarterback, you have offensive weapons, you have talent on that team. There is no doubt you have talent. You're in a division that looks more winnable than most in the NFL. Like, there's a lot of reasons that Liam Cohen, I could see, wanted this job. What I think is interesting is for him to have pulled his name out completely and said, nope, I'm not interested in talking. Then Baalke gets fired and he comes in and speaks to the fact that more and more, Frank, we see young coaches that want their first opportunity. They understand they want their first opportunity to be structured in a way that they can be successful out of the gate. That is an undeniable fact at this point.
This is the new thing. And whether it's Kayla Kaler over there at ESPN wrote a great piece on how agents are running this behind the scenes, that, you know, it's kind of a shady business of, hey, we represent both of these guys. Let's get both of these guys' jobs with a certain team. Whatever, that's business too. Like, this is what it is. Like, there's a multi-billion-dollar business we're dealing with. But yes, the new trend is a new coach isn't going to come in with a GM he's not comfortable with. Like, it's just, that's why the Ben Johnson thing is going to be a little awkward. Can he work with Ryan Poles? Like, that was kind of the outlier in this whole thing. I guess the Cowboys too, but we'll talk about them. We can talk about them all off season, I'm sure. But yes, the coaches want their own general manager, and I get it. You want to be on the same page. You want that Kyle Shanahan, John Lynch type of relationship. So yes, this is the new thing. Liam Cohen's going to get that. It's just the Jaguars needed to be kind of forced into the right decision here, almost like being forced into firing Urban Meyer when they did, but they got there. And also, by the way, real quick, the Buccaneers might be a little hurt about this, the way it was handled, but at the end of the day, the Buccaneers don't have anything to be upset about. Yeah. Okay. He ghosted you for a day, whatever. He was going to take this job. Like, what? Who in their right mind with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers is going to hold a grudge against Liam Cohen for taking a head coaching job at three times the pay? Like, that would be insane to me. I don't think the Buccaneers have anything to really be upset about. Other than, again, could this have been handled better? Yes, I get it, though. Liam Cohen probably doesn't want to lose out on this contract he has sitting on the table with the Buccaneers, so he wants to do this all in private. You can kind of see how this happened. But, and you know, also a lot of, we were talking about this before we started taping. I mean, a lot of people make fun of, like, the whole, like, Liam Cohen has a sick kid. Oh, he must be making that up. No, he really does. Like, he's talked about this before. His wife was on social media talking about this. Like, don't do this. You don't want these messages out there that are making fun of Liam Cohen for this excuse. This actually happened. Like, I don't know to what extent or his family situation or anything like that, but let's give him a little grace in that he is dealing with the family issues too as he's doing all of this. So yes, the Buccaneers have nothing. Like, everybody at the end of the day should just be kind of like, all right, we're upset, but we're going to get over it, because Liam Cohen ended up at the place he was going to be. Like, this was always going to happen in real life. And the Jaguars got their guy. Liam Cohen ends up with the dream job he's always wanted. Yes, the Buccaneers have to find a new offensive coordinator, but, well, that's the way life goes.
And having the Bucs done that recently, I mean, my God, second straight year. Like, Baker Mayfield is a head coach giver.
I heard it's going to be Baker Mayfield's eighth offensive coordinator in 8 years, which is just absolutely mind-blowing, but you know what? Baker's used to this, and he's making stars. Like, we're to the point where Baker Mayfield is making stars out of offensive coordinators, right? Second-rate guy to get a head coaching job. Good for Baker, I guess. Good for Liam Cohen and Dave Canales before him. This is life in the NFL. You lose good coordinators. There's nothing really that crazy about that. Like, yes, the Buccaneers have to scramble a little bit, but whatever. That's life.
Yeah, the Buccaneers will be just fine. Liam Cohen will be just fine. The Jags will be just fine. It's just ugly right now in the hiring process. And there's just no, and it's
sloppy.
The bulky part of it.
The whole thing was sloppy.
To put a nail in this, you have long said since that one of the biggest failings of the Jags is that Shad Khan is a barely invested owner. You can see that in the way that this entire process worked out.
Right.
Like,
yeah,
somebody who lives, eats, and breathes his football team in every possible way is far more organized going into the offseason than this approach that felt like throwing spaghetti against a wall to see what sticks. And that's just that if I'm a Jags fan, I don't love the fact that Shad Khan owns my team. But if I'm a Jags fan, I'm happy they got Liam Cohen as my head coach. Like yep. Two things he can
did
be true.
One, like he did the one thing that rich guys can do sometimes, or rich women too, just throw money at a problem. Yeah, I screwed this all up. How much is it going to cost to get me out of this? $13.5 billion a year. All right. Well, that's my fault. Here you go. Here's some extra money for you, Liam. Come take our job. But he did it. Like if I'm a Jaguars fan, I actually feel kind of good about that. That he didn't just be like Jerry Jones being cheap on his coaching search. Shad said, what's it going to cost for me to get out of this hole? Like, I've screwed this up. Okay. Like, we're sitting here on a, you know, Thursday afternoon, and I've screwed this whole thing up. How much is it going to cost me to dig out of this hole? Like, $13 million? All right. Whatever. Fine. Good.
Shad's kid, Tony, owns AEW. Mm-hmm, I feel like in this process, Shad went full million-dollar man. Everybody's got a price.
Everybody's got a price. I think that should happen. Like, again, I've kind of railed about this, and people who listen to Inside Coverage are probably sick of me saying it, but that's what owners should do. That's like what, you know, these guys have an edge. It's that they have more money than everybody else. What's it going to cost? Jerry Jones should have come into his coaching search saying, what is it going to cost to get me the best possible solution for my football team? He didn't do that. A lot of these owners didn't do that. Mark Davis didn't do that. But Shad Khan did. And I actually, as crazy as it sounds, for as much as I've ripped Shad Khan, as much as I was ripping him on Wednesday, I kind of give him credit for at least arriving at the right answer on the test. Maybe the work he showed was bad, but the right answer was on the test, and he'll pass the class.
I always go back with these rich negotiations in my mind with like the movie scene of, you know, you've got Khan on one side and he writes a number on a post-it note and he slides it across and Liam Cohen looks and goes, no, I'm out. And then Shad just goes, okay, writes another one and Liam Cohen looks and says, I'm in, when do I start? Like, yeah, it's just, right? Yeah. You know, we hit that number. When do I start? Shad, all that being said, call me. I mean, if you're just willy-nilly handing out like $13.5 million,
Jaguars.com podcast, I'll talk as much nice things about Trevor Lawrence as you could possibly do for $13.5 million a year. I'm sure you're in the same boat, too. That's a lot for that, sure. Why not?
And so now as we tape, we are about to talk about Robert Saleh returning to the 49ers as the defensive coordinator, but we have breaking news, Frank. For the second straight podcast, we get breaking news as we're going.
Yeah, that's crazy. Okay,
and
what do we got?
This one impacts my favorite football team. According to Adam Schefter, Pete Carroll and the Raiders have now reached agreement on a 3-year deal with the 4th-year option.
How do you feel about this? How do you feel? I want your opinion first.
Yeah, so everybody will talk about his age, and it was C-Rob that pointed out to us on this show a few weeks ago that the next Raiders hire will be their 15th hire, head coach hire, not including interim, 15th. In the last 31 years. So if your answer is that Pete Carroll's old and he's only going to coach for 3 years, that's above the league average for the Raiders. I mean, for me, at some point, what do we say about Harbaugh? Like, Harbaugh's never been a bad football coach. There's never been a time that you looked around and thought Harbaugh or Sean Payton didn't know what the hell they were doing. That, to me, is Pete Carroll. Is he going to turn around and make the Raiders a Super Bowl winner? I don't know. But what the Raiders need right now is an infusion of professionalism. They need somebody that knows how to come in and establish a new culture around what it takes to actually win football games. Now, what that means in 3, 4, 5 years, hell, I'd just like to see 3, 4, 5 years of meaningful football. Why are we worried about what it means in 3, 4, or 5 years? To me, what Pete Carroll does is he walks in, immediately will have some respect for what he's done around the league. The locker room will look at him. He immediately knows what he's going to put in place. That's why I wanted a second time or third time coach. I wanted somebody that had been there and done that. He comes in with the confidence to know who to listen to, know what's important, know how to build a structure, know how to build a franchise. Like, I honestly think this is a really great hire for the Raiders to get them out of the basement. Is it a hire that suddenly makes me think the Raiders are going to compete with Andy Reid and Patrick Mahomes for the next 10 years? Maybe not, but you've talked about it. We've talked about it. There are guys that raise the floor and guys that raise the ceiling. Pete Carroll ultimately will raise the floor, and I think the Seattle Seahawks are unquestionably better off for his time as their head coach, even now today without him.
Yeah, I agree.
I think the Raiders will unquestionably be better off for their time with Pete Carroll on their sideline.
It's a very interesting way to look at it. And I don't disagree. Like, Pete has been a great coach. And that goes back to USC, too. I didn't want to say a great NFL coach because he was obviously awesome at USC with those great teams he had. And so, look, honestly, like, if Pete Carroll was 60 years old, I'd be like, wow, our Raiders just hit a home run. Like, right? Like, the only thing that leads me to pause is his age. He's a year older than Bill Belichick. And he's a very energetic 73. Everybody's stunned by that Belichick stat, right? He really, Pete Carroll's older than Bill Belichick. You always have to look it up to make sure you're right. But because he's just so energetic and so full of life. And maybe that you know, overcomes a lot of these. The history of 70-year-old coaches in the NFL is not good. Like, it's just not. Like, you reach a point where this is a young man's game and you're putting in 80, 90, 100 hours a week. And that's not for 73-year-old men usually. And so I don't want to age discriminate against Pete Carroll, but there is some worry. And again, about the, this isn't going to be a 6-7 year thing. Like, it's just not. But you're right. Can he set a culture there that really needs to be done? Yes, he can. And he's won everywhere he's gone. I guess Patriots fans are probably rolling their eyes right now. But I think that Pete Carroll, he does. He raises the floor there. He can start to establish something. And then you got to start working on a succession plan very soon. Like, that's the one drawback of hiring Pete Carroll, is you have to be worried about what's next right away. Like, that's not the case with Liam Cohen. The Jaguars aren't worried about what happens next. They're like, we hope this guy's our coach for 15 years. Whereas the Raiders are going to have to start worrying about 2028, right? Who's going to be their coach then? But yes, ultimately, if you miss out on Ben Johnson, if you miss out on some of the other guys in this cycle, you can do a lot worse than Pete Carroll, who basically, like, never lost in Seattle. Yes, he did have some losing seasons, but they were competitive every single year. I respect what Pete has done. I respect how he goes about his business. And he's got a lot of old school thoughts, and I do laugh about those a little bit and chuckle about it and give him a hard time when I write previews or whatnot on teams. But Pete Carroll's a good football coach, and the Raiders got him, and I guess he could have done a lot.
Yeah, I mean, I'm looking here at his year-by-year record, and the worst season he's ever had as a head coach,
it was like 7-9
in the NFL, was 6-10 with the Jets in his 1 year in 94 with the Jets. He was 6-10 there. After that, the worst season he's ever had has been 7-10 once with Seattle in 2021. For the most part, you're talking about somebody that wins between 9 and 12 games a year. I think at some point you got to get an adult in the room. Right. And that's the whole offseason for the Raiders has been, who's the adult in the room? Like, I just, because Mark Davis owns a football team does not make Mark Davis a qualified football mind. And so what we've seen over and over and over again is Mark Davis goes for a big hire, a big splash, somebody else that he can sort of pour all the blame to and say, hey, I'm doing my best here. I'm spending money. Look at what I've done. I mean, at this point, Mark Davis is still paying John Gruden to be the head coach, right? He's paying so many. He's going to pay Antonio Pierce. Like, the amount of money that's gone out to head coaches that don't mean anything to this franchise. So if you're the Raiders right now, maybe this is the offseason of let the grownups take over. Between Brady and his say and Carroll and his say, maybe it's enough to at least start to implement what it means to not be a franchise that sucks inside the walls. Like, one thing that C-Rob has talked about that I think is a really important point is that the Raiders at times are buried in their past success. And
yes, correct.
I mean, my God, I'm 47 years old. I haven't seen successful. I've seen what, maybe 3 meaningful Raider seasons in my entire adult life. Like, I don't give a damn what the Raiders were in the 70s. I don't care who the Raiders were in the 80s. And at this point, I'm exhausted trying to remember who the Raiders even were at that point. Like, maybe you need somebody that can come in and be like, hey, don't care what you did in the 70s. Don't care what you did in the 80s. What are you going to do in the 2020s? And that is where I believe at least having somebody in the room that's been through this before, maybe that's an answer. You've tried everything else. You've tried the rah-rah guy. You've tried the big-name guy that you brought back to football. Like, I don't know. You didn't land Ben Johnson.
The offensive whiz kid. And yeah. You've tried everything. And now you land on a guy who, again, knows how to be a coach. And he's been a great coach for years and years and years at multiple levels. So, yeah. I mean, again, like, there is a drawback here. I think that's obvious. But look, he's a good coach, and you got a good proven head coach. You're not dealing with, hey, does, you know, whatever coordinator stumble, you know, I mean, his first time on the job. You have a guy who's going to come in, and in however many years he's going to coach there, probably will just reset the culture and change things. And see Rob's piece, like you said, people should go read it. He talked about how they're just so stuck in the Raider way and wanting to, like, live up to that they're really making mistakes in the present. That's going to live in my head whenever I think about the Raiders going forward. Like, it was really, really well written and well said. So this might get them out of that. Pete Carroll doesn't care about the Raider way. He just doesn't. Like, not that he's not going to just, you know, take a dump on the past or anything, but it's not like he's not beholden to it. He's not, this isn't his thing. He's got his own thing. It's always compete and whatever. All the other catchphrases Pete Carroll has, that he's not stuck in the past with the Raiders. And I think that's a good thing too.
His regime discovered Russell Wilson when nobody was really looking at Russell Wilson in the draft. His regime decided that Geno Smith wasn't washed. That's the other thing too. Like, he's had success at the quarterback position. But Frank, this is kind of wild, though. Think about the coaches in the AFC West from a brand recognition standpoint.
At this point. I know, right? Yeah.
Andy Reid, Harbaugh, Sean Payton, and Pete Carroll all going against each other. Like, that's just, it's a lot of name power in one division at the head coaching position.
I can't do the math in my head, but that's a lot of rings, too. I mean, five, if I know that right. And Jim Harbaugh's never even won one of them, and he's one of the best coaches in the NFL. So, yeah, that is a stacked division, a fun division. It's, look, at the end of the day, whether the Raiders win, whether they lose, I don't care. They're not my favorite team. But Pete Carroll being back in the NFL is a good thing. He's one of the characters in the NFL. He's fun. I'm glad Pete's back.
Quick before we go to break, Athletic reporting Robert Saleh returns to the 49ers as their defensive coordinator. This made too much sense to me not to happen. I think this is a great hire for them. And it really, like, San Francisco needs to just calm things down a little bit right now. It feels like this does that.
Yeah, and I think, you know, San Francisco could bounce back on defense next year. I mean, they've been kind of juggling coordinators, haven't done that well the last couple of years. Now you got somebody who you know works well with Kyle Shanahan. And I think Robert Saleh keeps his name hot in the head coaching cycle next year. I've said before, I'll say again, I've been saying since he got fired by Ambassador Johnson, he's going to be good in his second job. I truly believe that. All the stuff he went through in this job kind of gave him reps that other guys just don't have for head coaching jobs. I think he's going to be a really, really good head coach hire when it happens. Now he can go back, spend a year coaching the 49ers defense, probably have success because they have a lot of talent on that side of the ball. And I think it's a good move for the 49ers, and a good move for Saleh too, who I truly believe is going to be a head coach in 2026.
We've got a matchup this weekend for the ages. The question is it the new Brady Manning? It's tougher to figure that out than you think. We'll break it down in just a second. There is a recent quarterback battle for the ages that will be stuck in all of our heads for a long time, and that's obviously Brady Manning. And I don't think it's wildly dissimilar to what we had then. We had Brady Manning, and then over on the side, we had Big Ben over here that's like, hey, I deserve to be part of this conversation too, but it was really about Brady Manning. We're getting the same thing now because everybody's trying to figure out, is Josh Allen, Patrick Mahomes the new Brady Manning? And if so, where's that leave Lamar in this conversation? Because Lamar, clearly about to be a three-time MVP, you would think it would be him, but I guess for me, because the Bills have to get through the Chiefs and because it always felt like the Patriots and the Colts had to get through each other, I think that's part of why this comp feels right. Like, I do believe that Mahomes Allen is the new Brady Manning.
I guess. I don't think we're ever going to replicate Brady Manning, who might be 1-2 on the greatest of all time list. And yes, it's different because, look, Lamar has had a better career than Josh Allen to this point. Like, so why isn't Lamar the Frazier to Patrick Mahomes Ali? So it's a little flawed, but yes, we try to come up with these one-on-one battles. But the truth is, I think unlike Brady Manning, because we knew Manning was trying to get up the hill, and it does seem similar with Josh Allen. But to me anyway, this really isn't that much of a rivalry until Josh Allen beats Patrick Mahomes in a huge playoff game. Like, this is just, Patrick Mahomes is kind of like if I'm Patrick Mahomes, I'm looking at it like, yeah, Josh Allen's a great player, but why am I worried about him? I've been to 7 straight AFC championship games. I have 3 rings. I've won everything you can win, and he's really won nothing yet. He hasn't even been to a Super Bowl yet. So I think that now there's time, like, again, but I don't think this rivalry is really on until Josh Allen knocks him off. Like, I think that it's a nice battle, and they're two great players, phenomenal players, fun players, but I don't think Patrick Mahomes really sweats Josh Allen in that way. I don't think he really views him as like a threat to his like legacy or anything, right? Like, he's a great player, but he's never beat him. Like, he's beat him in a regular season, but what does that matter?
Yeah, that's the hard part about this, because it's certainly not Josh Allen's fault that they lost a lead with 13 seconds left, right?
But that is such a crushing loss. My goodness, yeah. If the Bills never win a Super Bowl, that is just going to live. Like, How do you ever get over that, right? Like that's
and how different would this how different would we perceive Josh Allen and the entire rivalry, and what a difference it would make to the way we look at Kansas City and Mahomes. Like, this is the hardest part of this game, and I know we're going to pick the game later in the show, but Frank, like, I sit here and think about this all the time. Like, in my mind, the Bills are a better football team. In my mind, Josh Allen right now is actually playing today. Right now, this season, Josh Allen has outplayed Patrick Mahomes. Like, I don't think that that's a hot take. All right? You did. But he also is taking on the Chiefs, and the Chiefs never lose. So, like, I just, like, you know, like, the counter argument is just, but it's the Chiefs. And that's not a quality counter argument. But, man, if you're the Bills, I said this last year. Last year, I was like, well, if the Bills can't get through the Chiefs now at home, I mean, if not now, then when? And I crushed them on this show for not being able to get that done at home. I kind of have the same feeling this year where it's like, my God, you're better than Kansas City. Just go beat them. Like, you are better than they are. Beat them. But it is not that simple. So, like, the hardest, it makes me want to go back and revisit the way I approached Brady versus Manning, because I just don't, I don't know at the time. I wasn't looking at the same scrutiny of the quarterbacks that we do even in today's society. Like, we want to pin these games on Josh Allen if he doesn't win, but my God, there are 53 players on a team, you know? Like,
yeah,
that's the hard part.
Still. Yeah, for sure. Like, there's no doubt about that. Yeah, it is. The 13 seconds loss was not on Josh Allen. He played literally as well as I've ever seen a player play in a playoff game. Like, that was, I just used play like three times in six words.
Yeah, but that was impressive. Like, you managed that like a professional. I just want to say that,
Well. Anyway, but yes, as well as you could possibly play. And they lost. Like, you can't pin that on Josh Allen. If that's why quarterback wins is a dumb stat. Like, if you're giving Josh Allen an 0-1 for that game at Arrowhead a few years ago when they lost in overtime, you just aren't doing this right. Quit watching football. Quit trying to analyze football, because he was awesome in that game. But, you know, I think a lot of this too, and I think about this, you know, with the Bills and the Chiefs, and I think it comes down to the individual level too at quarterback. I think part of the Bills' problem is I think they just feel all of the weight of this, where the Chiefs are impervious to pressure, where the Bills have never won a Super Bowl. They haven't been to a Super Bowl since the end of the 93 season. They play in a small market where football is everything. I grew up near Green Bay, Wisconsin. I know what it's like to live in a market like that where football is everything 365 days out of the year. And I think that can, it's a great thing. Bills Mafia is awesome and all that kind of stuff. But it can also work against you at times where you know the entire region, all they want is, let's get to one Super Bowl. Let's win one Super Bowl in my lifetime. And I think at some point you feel that. And you could almost feel the pressure last year when they had that home game against the Chiefs. When things started to not go well, you could feel like the tension. Through your TV, you could feel it, right? Like, and I think that's what happened to Detroit last Saturday, honestly. Well, like, they're at home, and all of a sudden things are going bad and you can feel everything get tense. And it just, you can feel the pressure of the Lions trying to live up to this. Hey, we got to get this done for this city, for this fan base, for this franchise, for ourselves. And I think the Bills are feeling that too. All of these playoff failures. And I'm not talking about like Scott Norwood and Thurman Thomas losing his helmet and all, not those, but the recent playoff failures.
The recent ones, yeah.
I think that they really hold these on their shoulders. And the first time something goes wrong, it's like, uh-oh, here we go again. And it's the Chiefs. Where the Chiefs aren't burdened with any of that anymore. The Chiefs have been in so many of these spots and succeeded in so many of these spots. I think one of the reasons they win all these close games is this psychological edge they have over everybody, where they just don't feel pressure. They just, look, and I hate to say they're on house money, because that's a bad way to put it, because going for three straight Super Bowls is so historic that we'd be talking about it the rest of our lives. But it's almost like, well, we've been here. We've won. We don't feel this like intense, like we got to get this done or else type of deal. Like you talked about, like last year with the Bills game. If you don't get it done now, then when? You don't think the players know that? You don't think the players understand this? And this season too, if like, we're going to run out of chances at some point. Can we get over this hump? And I think that's a huge part of this rivalry, if you want to call it that, between the Bills and the Chiefs, where one side is very comfortable at close games and pressure games. Like we've kind of made fun of the Chiefs. We're like, all you do is win close games, catch and blow somebody out. They're lucky, blah, blah, blah. But all these reps they have in these close games matter right now, where they just like, whatever. We're like, oh, it's a one score game. Who cares? We've been in this situation 14 times this year or whatever, and won every single one of them. I don't think the Bills can feel that confident because they've had a hard time getting over this hump.
You have open my eyes to a way that we need to alter our conversation on pressure forever. Because I think so many people have pressure. Oftentimes I've been like, look, everybody feels it. I don't think the advantage here is that the Bills feel pressure. I think the advantage here is that Kansas City has an absence of pressure. And it is for the very reason you just mentioned. Like, when you have done something a lot in your life, you no longer feel weird doing it. You know, the first time I ever sat in front of a mic live to do a show, I was nervous. I think most people are the first time you're doing like live radio or whatever. And you're like, oh my God, what if I screw up? You know, the first time I ever did a TV show, I was nervous I was going to drop an F-bomb. The first time I ever played a concert, I was nervous, right? Like all of these things play in. But then when you've done it hundreds of times, it's, you know, it truly is. I get asked all the time if I get nervous playing an instrument. And my answer to, I laugh at that. I'm like, no, I've done it my whole life. Like it's just, you throw me a violin and put me on stage in front of 20,000 people. And that's like, that's what I've done my whole life. It's not a big deal. I think what I'm realizing through your conversation that maybe we don't put enough emphasis on sometimes is that because the Chiefs have gone through so much and they've seen so much, they don't even know how to feel that pressure anymore. And then when you stack on that, that you almost become a team of destiny. When you stack on that, that you find wild ways to win this year, whether it's the blocked kick that never happens for anybody or the fumbled snap, you know, that never happens for anybody. At some point you look around, you're like, nah, we're kissed by the football guys. Just the way things work around here. There is a confidence. There's a level.
There's a confidence that goes along with that. Yeah. So and we're going to figure out a way. Yeah.
You think about your pulse and you think about like your adrenaline you feel, and you take all of that out of the equation, it's impossible not to realize that because of what the Chiefs have gone through, they don't have those same spikes. You're right. Like, so for me, just in this conversation, it's not just that Buffalo feels tight. It's that the Chiefs have been through so much, they wouldn't even know how to feel tight if they tried. Like that's a wild difference in the way the entire game plays out.
Yeah, I agree. And I mean, what situation haven't they been in? I guess like being down 24 points and coming back. But I mean, even that, like you just feel like, again, well, this is going to work out. We'll figure out a way. I think their coach exudes that confidence. Their quarterback exudes that confidence. A lot of their veterans exude that confidence. So I think that matters. And now like that doesn't last forever. Like I remember one of my favorite games of all time, and it just came up this week, is the 2006 AFC Championship game where the Colts fell behind, I believe it was 21-3. Peyton Manning threw a pick six and to the Patriots. And it felt like, here we go again. And the Colts are never going to get over this hump. And then the Colts from that moment on played one of the most inspired games you could play. And they came back and they won it in the last minute and got the interception. And it's one of my favorite games of all time just because of the narrative surrounding it and how the Colts bounce back. So it doesn't necessarily, you know, matter forever. If Josh Allen gets a ball with 2 minutes left in this game, he could drive them downfield and win the game because he's probably the MVP of the league this year. But there is something to be said about it that when you talk about like who's a better team in this game, I absolutely agree with you. I think the Bills are the better football team this year. There's a lot of analytics that are going to tell you that. We saw them beat the Chiefs already in a regular season. Now, albeit that was in Buffalo. But I do, if you just told me that if this was just a simulation and human feelings weren't involved with this and intangibles weren't involved with this, I think the Bills win this game. But it's not that case. That's not it. Like, there's so much more that goes along with this game and the pressure you feel and the stage you're on that it's a real thing with the Chiefs. That as part of their dynasty, that in pressure situations, they come up big, and it's because of the personnel they have and the experiences they have.
So where does, in this, you know, Brady versus Manning type debate, where is the right place to slot Lamar? I think just because
I think it's just different. I don't think we could do this. I don't think we could do Brady versus Manning with who's the... I just think it's a three-way, like, it's different. It's different, and it feels like Josh Allen is Charles Barkley and Lamar Jackson is Patrick Ewing at this point, right? Like, I don't think that this is real. Like,
oh, that's
this is just
a good
different
analogy.
Right? Like, until one of them breaks through, I don't know that we could have this conversation about who's Brady, who's Manning. I think that it's right. It's just different. Like everything is different in life, right? We try to fall back on things we know and stuff like that for the familiarity. But I think this is just different than everything where there's two awesome players who are trying to validate themselves and their legacies and everything. Like Josh Allen's amazing. Lamar Jackson's amazing. I think Lamar Jackson should win MVP. It's probably going to go Josh Allen. So we're going to say there's two MVP quarterbacks who are chasing the Jordan of his era, and that's Patrick Mahomes. And I just think it's it's a different, unique situation that we're dealing with here, that we're going to look back and say this, you know, three-man battle royal or whatever it's going to be. It's just Brady Manning was so unique, and that there was just, again, maybe the top two quarterbacks of all time just jostling for superiority year after year after year in the playoffs. This is just different. You add a guy who's honestly leading, he's almost lapped the field at this point. Josh Allen and Lamar Jackson, legacy-wise, are nowhere close to Patrick Mahomes right now. That's just the truth. And again, this is no disrespect to either guy as a player, because they're awesome. I love watching Lamar Jackson. He's one of my favorite players of all time. Josh Allen is amazing to watch. But until they at least make a Super Bowl, they're not in the same playing field right now as Patrick Mahomes. It's insulting, honestly, to Patrick Mahomes to say, who's Manning to his Brady? He's Brady and Manning right now. Like, there's no comparison in these three guys yet. And that could change. It could change on Sunday. It could change next season. It could change the season after that. But right now, Patrick Mahomes is Jordan, and everybody else is chasing him.
I mean, to some degree here, for me, Lamar and Josh are both arguably, like, they're competing to be the best player in the NFL right now, which is incredible to say. The two of them are clearly competing to be the best player in the league. They just happen to be competing against a quarterback that I think is cementing himself as the best of all time. Like, I have to say this loud. Like, I think by the time Mahomes and Andy Reid are done, Patrick Mahomes is seen as better than Brady and Manning combined.
It's like, interesting. It's so, the Brady Mahomes stuff is so interesting. And that's why I hated even coming out of my mouth the house money thing, because every season for Patrick Mahomes is huge for him when he gets to the stage, because at the end of the day, it's how many rings does he have versus Brady? Can he be the GOAT if he only has 4 versus Brady's 7? Is 5 versus 7? Does he need to get the 7? These are all debates that just fascinate us. That's why we talk about it all the time.
The fact that he's 29 years old, Patrick Mahomes isn't even 30 yet, and he's gone to
AFC Championship
game
every single season as a starter. That shouldn't happen. Like, this is, again, this isn't Major League Baseball where the Dodgers are outspending everybody. This isn't the NBA where one singular player can kind of take over an entire league. This is a league that's set up for parity. Like, you are not supposed to make 7 straight conference championship games. We said this all the time with the Patriots and Bill Belichick and Brady and their dynasty about how can you do this for 20 straight years. And then it just happens again. It's crazy. And it's so much respect to Mahomes and Reed and what they've built. And all the haters out there, like, we come at this in a very different way. Like, I'll be honest. I don't want the Chiefs to make the Super Bowl just because I like new blood. I like covering new teams. I've covered the Chiefs in the Super Bowl a few times. I would like to see a new team there. The new stories that would come about with the Bills. So in my heart, as far as my professional aspect of this, I am rooting for the Bills to make it because I want to cover a different team in the Super Bowl. But I don't really hate the Chiefs. Like, a lot of fans out there, look, the refs. That's nonsense. I can step back and say what we're seeing out of this team is just so ridiculously awesome that it is fun to watch it unfold and fun to watch. Like, can Josh Allen get over this hump? And can Patrick Mahomes win 3 in a row is something nobody's ever done before. And I think that when time passes and all the bad feelings about the Chiefs winning every year fades, we're going to look back at this Chiefs dynasty and be like, that was pretty awesome to live through and pretty awesome to witness.
Which is why I refuse to not appreciate it while it's happening, because I think you're right. Every single person right now that is just wildly complaining about Patrick Mahomes is the same person that in 30 years is going to be telling their grandkids, no. This quarterback No, I watched Patrick Mahomes. Now, he was great. Like,
Arch Manning III is nowhere near what Patrick Mahomes was 40 years ago.
Yeah. It is inevitable that that's what's going to happen. So, you know, I choose to appreciate the greatness while we have it. All right, we'll pick the game, but first we're going to take a quick break. We'll pick the AFC Championship in just a second. All right, so the line is 2 points for Kansas City. Buffalo at Kansas City. My friend, what do you got in this?
I think we're going to be on opposite sides, right? We've been too friendly. It's not really a feisty Friday.
Frank? You suck. You're terrible. You know what's old and worn out? Not Pete Carroll, you, okay?
Yeah, I think Fitz, that gold record behind you is a little askew. It's not straight up and down.
Damn it, he's right about that. Son of a biscuit.
I
know he's going to
drive you nuts. Look, there's part that I'm very analytically driven, right? I try not to be completely wrapped up in it. I try to keep in mind that there's other parts to this. It's not just the numbers. the analytics side of me, though, says the Bills are the better team. The Chiefs had that great record, 15-1, but they weren't a 15-1 dominant type of team. Like, this was a team that looked vulnerable through the season, and they did catch some breaks. A lot of those of their own making, but they did catch some breaks, without a doubt. But I look at the, I look at that side and say, I should pick the Bills. And then I'm like, hey, dummy, you were 0-4 last season picking against the Bills, against the Chiefs in the postseason. Don't do this again. You know the Chiefs find ways to win. They are incredible at winning games. As weird as it sounds to count that as a strength of your team, you know how to win games. You're good at winning football games. I'm going with the Kansas City Chiefs. I just think that they're inevitable. This team just wins. And when the chips are on the line, Patrick Mahomes just elevates his play and he finds the way. Like, you know, we saw games like, again, I hate to keep coming back to Jordan, but he is the comp for Patrick Mahomes, where there were games where Jordan didn't shoot that great, right? He was 6-20 or whatever. But when it was the end of the game and there's 10 seconds left, you're like, all right, well, Jordan's going to win this one. The same way with Mahomes, where you can say he didn't have a great season. He didn't belong anywhere near the MVP conversation. But yet, is there any player you'd rather have with the game on the line and ball in his hands? Absolutely not. Like, this is where Patrick Mahomes thrives. They're in Arrowhead. They were 15-1 in games they cared about for a reason. I got the Chiefs. I'm just not going to keep going down this road of picking against the Chiefs.
I'm about to be very sacrilegious, right? Because I grew up on a phrase. I grew up on a phrase that supposedly personified success in football. And that phrase was just win, baby. And there is one franchise in the NFL that actually accomplishes that phrase now. It's not my beloved Raiders. It's Kansas City Chiefs. City Chiefs just win, baby, over and over and over again. It's what they do. And the problem is you can't beat Patrick Mahomes in a close game. How many times have I said that? And you can't blow the Chiefs out. So what you have right now is a team that, you know, frankly, I think we see this annually. The unlocking of Travis Kelce is going to be a continual crazy part of the playoff conversation. Awesome. Yeah. Patrick Mahomes is going to make four or five plays that will save drives. And those four or five plays are enough of a difference maker that, look, I think in every possible way, the Buffalo Bills are better than the Kansas City Chiefs. I think they if we were playing video game football and we put different uniforms on both teams, I think the Bills could win this game by 10 points. But we're not. This game's at Arrowhead, and this game is still Patrick Mahomes, Andy Reid, and Steve Spagnuolo. Like, I don't think you can beat this version of the Chiefs. So even though my brain tells me that the Bills are better, my brain also tells me that I don't like losing money betting against the Chiefs. I
thought you were going Kansas Bills. City, I thought you were going Bills. I really did.
They're the better team, but I can't do it. Being the better team doesn't matter. And the Kansas City Chiefs find ways to win, and you know, when we're in New Orleans together, I'll go to every voodoo shop I can and I'll try and find a voodoo doll that will fix my Raiders and that will unfix the Kansas City Chiefs. But until that happens, man, I got Kansas City winning this game and a heartbreak for Buffalo. Like, I am with you. I am rooting so hard for the Bills. And it's just,
I am too, just because, again, it is nothing against the Chiefs. I harbor nothing against Kansas City. I like Kansas City. Jack Stack, it's awesome. Arrowhead Stadium's fun. It's great game day atmosphere. All this stuff. I think Patrick Mahomes is one of the more likable superstars of all time. And I know everybody's like falling back now. Oh, he flopped that one time. Like, I don't care. Patrick Mahomes represents the NFL so well. He's so fun to watch. He's great to watch. He's very personable. But I just like new blood. And maybe that's because I grew up rooting for terrible teams and other sports. Like, I know the Brewers are never making a World Series again in my lifetime, so I root for a team like the Bills, who deserve to have that one moment of glory where that's going to happen. But it's just the Chiefs, man. They're tough to beat.
Do we think, like, does just making another Super Bowl just cement the legacy for Kansas City, or do they have to win another Super Bowl?
I don't think they have to win. I don't even think they need to win on Sunday. I think that this Chiefs dynasty is as good as the Cowboys in the 90s. Maybe the 49ers in the 80s. Like, and I know people, like, because we remember things as greater than they are, when things are, like, in the moment, we don't think of them as great as they are, right? Like, it takes time to appreciate them. I try to be in the moment. Rob Gronkowski was at the peak of his powers. I would say Rob Gronkowski is best tight end of all time. And people, how do you say that already? He's only in his fifth year. It's because I watch NFL football and I've never seen a tight end like Rob Gronkowski. I feel the same way about the Chiefs. This is a dynasty. Like, no question to me. Like, this is just as good as Cowboys in the 90s or 49ers or whoever you want to throw out there as a dynasty. Yes, they could lose on Sunday and never make it back to an AFC championship game. And that my opinion doesn't change. This is one of the all-time great dynasties in sports history.
I think we also need to take a second as old guys in the room and remind everyone that like a dynasty is the norm in the NFL. Like I was talking to somebody the other day that was like, I'm just tired of the Chiefs. It's like, well, this is cyclical. The Chiefs are right now are crushing everybody. Before the Chiefs, it was the Patriots that crushed everybody. As you mentioned, the Cowboys had a dynasty in the 90s. The 49ers had a dynasty in the 80s. The Steelers had a dynasty in the 70s. The Browns had a dynasty.
That, yeah. Hey, so, don't skip the Packers. Let's skip
skip the Packers. Yeah. I skipped the Packers. The concept of a dynasty and an also-ran. Like, I think part of the reason there are so many galvanized Raiders fans that hate the Steelers is because the Raiders were the second best team in the NFL during an era where they happened to unfortunately be in the same conference as the best team. And like, this is not a new thing. The Cowboys were throttled down by a 49ers team that was how many more Super Bowls would the Bears or the Giants and the Cowboys have won during that era if they hadn't been for Joe Montana and then Steve Young? And then you get to the Cowboys. Like, there's always a team that is being throttled down by a dynasty that is sort of reducing their legacy. So what's happening right now to the Bills and to arguably Lamar and the Ravens, like, ain't new. That's what the NFL's built itself on. Parity exists, but dynasties are as much of the part of the NFL culture as they are the NBA culture. And I don't know why more people don't realize that.
No, that's a good point. It's a really good point. And this Chiefs one is, it's as good as any I've seen. I respect the Patriots more for the longevity of it. Like 20 years is so ridiculous. But these years with the Chiefs, and look, dynasties don't have to be 10, 15 years. Like I've always been of the mind, like the NFL changes so fast and you could even put seven dominant years together like the Chiefs have. That's dynasty. Like that seven is good enough for me. I'll even take five. Like the NFL is not set up for this.
We don't even talk about a Bills team that went to four straight Super Bowls because they lost.
That stinks. And one of the great Tecmo Super Bowl teams of all time too. But that Bills team was unbelievable. Like that Bills team was phenomenal. Like they were so much fun and so great. And they just ended up going against an unbelievable game plan against the Giants. Bill Belichick and Bill Parcells put on a coaching clinic for two games to beat the 1990 49ers and 90 Bills, who coming off 51-3. Sorry, Fitz. And then you face the 1991 Washington team, which is one of the great all-time teams, Mark Rippon. They were just absolutely dominant. And then you run into the Cowboys dynasty. It's like, well, okay. Like they just caught basically one unbelievable performance and then three straight years of just going against great, great teams. And you just end up on the wrong side of it.
Yeah, just, you know, get a history book, people. That's all I'm saying. All right. Stone and Emmy doing God's work behind the scene. We always appreciate them. You know to follow us on social media. If you've listened to this much, be sure to rate, review, subscribe. Always appreciate you guys taking the time to do that. It helps us a lot. And we'll be back on Sunday night recapping championship game weekend. Most importantly, Frank, screw you, buddy. It's been a good feisty Friday. Go screw yourself. All right, there we go. I did that in a way that Emmy didn't even have to beep anything. Thanks so much for listening. Have a great weekend, y'all.